watching Asia Tonight, our top stories this hour. Malaysian Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin and his cabinet to quarantine for 2 weeks after coming into contact with a COVID-19 case. More than 430 new infections have been reported across the country, a record daily jump. New Delhi is bracing for air pollution levels to spike this week because of a dip in temperature as winter approaches. There are fears this could worsen the COVID-19 crisis in the city as poor air quality can make viral infections more severe. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's approval rating has hit a record high despite the surging coronavirus outbreak. An independent survey shows 9 in 10 Filipinos approved of both President Duterte's performance and personality.
And for more on this, Buena Bernal joins us live from Manila. Buena, an overwhelming thumbs up, it seems, for the president despite the pandemic. What's behind Mr. Duterte's lasting popularity?
Well, the Presidential Communications Office said that the results of this survey by independent polling firm Pulse Asia can be attributed to certain government policies, including the one-year extension of the pandemic-related state of calamity to expedite fund disbursement and efforts to revitalize the economy. But critics are also saying that in interpreting these survey results, you have to look at social milieu and the climate of fear in the country in terms of airing dissent. Is there an incentive for survey takers to be truthful in terms of airing that dissent? And critics are highlighting a pattern of intimidation. You've seen how critics have been jailed in the case of opposition Senator Laila De Lima after drug-related charges were filed against her, after she initiated the Senate probe on the abuses alleged under the drug war, or have been ousted in the case of Chief Justice Maria Lourdes Sereno, who also aired criticism against the drug war before her ouster, supposedly for different reasons, or even media personalities, journalist and Duterte critic Maria Ressa, convicted of cyber libel, facing various other charges, or even the largest broadcaster, ABS-CBN, shut down after coming head-to-head with Mr. Duterte over unaired political advertisement issues. Now, on the other hand as well, Mr. Duterte has always been a hugely popular president. If you're looking at those surveys by credible polling firms, and even the pattern from the time he got elected in 2016 to the midterm elections in 2019. If you recall, in 2016, he won by a landslide of 16 million votes on a platform of ending drug proliferation and criminality in the Philippines within 3 to 6 months. And in the 2019 midterm elections, we saw that not one candidate from the leading opposition slate called Ocho Derecho secured a senatorial seat. And instead, we saw names or people who had no national legislative experience being elected into national posts largely on the basis of the support of the president, including Senator Bongo, who was the previous special assistant to the president, who was also a long-term aide of Mr. Duterte when he was mayor of Davao City in Southern Philippines, and Senator Bato de la Rosa, who was the national police chief under Mr. Duterte, widely regarded as the architect of the Philippine drug war. In terms of what's at stake here, you see that a continued popularity of Mr. Duterte could also mean a further consolidation of power. And that's very important in the Philippines, where politics is largely driven by public sentiment. Whoever is popular, whoever is that figure, others follow or shift alliances. But also you have to ask, what is the marginal benefit here? Because even in status quo, Mr. Duterte already has huge institutional support. For example, in the Supreme Court, he has appointed 11 out of the 14 sitting justices there. Or even in Congress, Congress is dominated by his allies, institutions that are ideally the checks and balance of the executive branch. And that's essentially what lawyer Barry Gutierrez, who is the spokesperson for the Vice President Lenny Robredo from the opposition Liberal Party, that's what he argued against the rebuke from presidential spokesperson Harry Roque when he said that Mrs. Robredo lagged behind in those surveys because she was politicking amid a pandemic. And Mr. Gutierrez said that the office of the vice president does not have the same institutional support as that of the president.
Right. Thanks for that update. Bueno Bernal speaking to us from Manila.
U.S. President Donald Trump could be discharged from hospital within 24 hours. Doctors who have been treating him for COVID-19 say his health is improving. At the same time, though, some experts are warning that the president's infection may be more severe than the diagnosis that's been made public. Mr. Trump received extra oxygen after his blood oxygen levels dipped twice over the weekend. He was also given the steroid dexamethasone, which is normally reserved for serious cases. Mr. Trump, though, has been eager to show he's doing well. He's ventured out in a motorcade to greet supporters who'd gathered outside the hospital. The president also posted a video on Twitter to reassure the public that he is recovering.
It's been a very interesting journey. I learned a lot about COVID. I learned it by really going to school. This is the real school. This isn't the let's read the book school. And I get it and I understand it. And it's a very interesting thing. And I'm going to be letting you know about it.
And Simon Marks joins us from Washington, D.C. now. Simon, what's the latest on Mr. Trump's condition? Is he likely to be discharged today?
Well, it's looking as though it's possible, Glenda. We've just heard from the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, and I think we have to caveat all of this by saying that the weekend witnessed, even for this White House, a stunning degree of misleading information being put into the public domain about the president's condition, about the treatment that he was receiving. So it is very hard to accept all of this at face value, but the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, has just told NBC News the discharge decision will be made later today between the president and his medical team. A turn of phrase that is raising some eyebrows here. It suggests that the president is going to be an active participant in determining the outcome of that particular conversation. It's perfectly possible that he's going to return to the White House. We don't know if he returns to the White House whether he's going to agree to go into isolation and to quarantine, or whether he intends merely to continue going back to his daily activities even while he is still at substantial risk of infecting other people with COVID-19. Those people, of course, include the staff and secret service agents who were with him in that ride-by last night as he waved at supporters who had gathered outside Walter Reed Medical Center. The Secret Service now says that the staff that traveled with the president will be placed into quarantine. They will not say how many Secret Service staff may have tested positive for COVID-19. They say they don't put that information out publicly, but certainly any Secret Service personnel involved in that motorcade last night will now be going into 2 weeks of isolation. And this, of course, that ride-by came moments after the president issued that video saying of COVID-19, I get it. Well, public health officials at the very medical center where he's being treated say that he doesn't get it at all. One attending physician there described the president's decision to leave the hospital and get into the SUV as, and this is a quote, insanity.
It does seem like a strange decision given what we know about COVID-19, Simon. But Mr. Trump's illness, it has put a stop to his campaigning for now, at least, something he'll be keen to get back to. What's the plan for the Trump campaign with less than a month before the election?
Well, I think you could argue, Steve, it hasn't entirely put a stop to his campaigning. He's been on Twitter this morning relentlessly campaigning, all in block capitals, a whole series of messages reminding voters of issues on which he believes he has a strong record and encouraging them to get out and vote. He's clearly itching for the opportunity, as he said in a video released on Saturday, to return to the fray so that he can continue the task of making America great again, as he put it. We know that Vice President Mike Pence has been tapped to fill in for the president at one rally later this week, I think on Thursday night here in the United States. But look, the unpredictability of his behavior, even now that he has tested positive for COVID-19 and continues to be a risk of infecting other people, means that we have no idea just how soon he plans to return to the rally stage and how soon he plans to continue battling for four more years in the Oval Office in person. I mean, there's another presidential debate still notionally on the books for October the 15th. It would seem inconceivable that that can take place because it's within the two-week window of the president's positive test result coming back. But at this point, the inconceivable in this country often becomes the inevitable. So I'm not really sure where we all go from here.
All right. Well, we're all in this together. Thanks very much for that. Simon Marks reporting to us from Washington, D.C.